Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. It's really true. Your sexual self, that is the unique blend of attitude, experience, and sensuality you bring to bed, is never fixed. And my guest is Lynn Brown Rosenberg, and she really knows about this concept because she wrote her memoir, My Sexual Awakening at 70. Welcome to this program, Lynn. It's so nice to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So this book is really quite eye-opening, and I'm wondering if you could share with all of us, what did you learn from writing this memoir? Kind of an overview, and then we're going to get into some particulars.
Well, the overview, I had a lot of trust issues to deal with, and from early on. And one of the things I learned in doing this is that there are some people you can trust who will trust you back.
Yeah.
I not only couldn't trust, but I wasn't trusted for some reason. And I also learned, most importantly, that blaming myself for falling short of expectations is not really warranted or deserved, nor is it a requirement for love, which seemed to be the case in my family.
Yes, I have read your book, and it's very poignant in many ways. I mean, you had kind of a rough childhood.
I did.
And then we'll get into this, but you've had bouts of depression and anxiety, and so your journey has been not a smooth one, but I think it's fabulous, Lynn, because you've kept your eyes open, and along the way, you have learned and improved a lot, and you've tapped into your sexuality. I always have considered intimacy an important source of balance, and it can be the deepest sense of comfort, and someone's capacity for intimacy, you know, if that isn't there, and it wasn't for you in the beginning,
right?
And that's why I think you had some trouble with trust and being vulnerable and making commitments and not being able to regulate your distress well. Yeah, you had these problems because of your family of origin, and your mother was very critical, and so was your father, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to just talk a little bit, because, you know, I think it's important to you're talking a lot in your book about your sexual awakening, but there were all kinds of awakenings for you about your whole self, too.
Yes. Well, you know, my father started off being very affectionate.
So that helped you.
Huh?
That helped you, yes.
That did help me. That helped me in my early life. I was daddy's little girl for a while, and that really saved me because... my mother, when I was 4 years old, threatened to send me away. Of course, I didn't know she was threatening. I didn't know that she wouldn't go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
So she picked up the phone to call someone to pick me up.
Mm.
And
how terrifying for you at four.
Terrifying. Terrifying. And it was interesting that she never did own up to that her whole life or apologize for it or ever mention it again. But anyway, he was very loving in the early part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But then then the first time that it manifested itself, where both parents really really made an abrupt decision that affected me for decades, was when they took me to Highland Springs, which is a resort in California.
And I read about that in your book. Yes, and you were vulnerable.
I was vulnerable. Met a young boy. I was 14, and I met a young boy, and we were dancing and having a great time, and he wanted to go for a walk, and I said, fine, and we went outside, and this was my very first time kissing anyone, a boy,
right.
And romantically,
mm-hmm.
And it was just tremendously exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I wouldn't do anything or go any further because I was well trained.
Yes, you were.
So, my parents found me somehow.
Right? Yeah. Huh? Well,
yeah, they found me on a chaise lounge.
Yes.
And told the boy to leave immediately and grabbed me by the arm and took me back to our cabin and told me that only prostitutes enjoyed sex and it was just awful. It was just awful. So that made an impact on me.
Of course, because you continue to get negative sexual messages from your parents, from both your mother and father, but mainly your father, that sort of had to do with prostitutes are the ones who enjoy sex.
Right. Right.
And you say on your website, which is Lynn, L-Y-N-N, Brown, Rosenberg.com, you say that nice Jewish girls didn't... one of the messages was nice Jewish girls don't enjoy sex.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, although we weren't religious,
mm-hmm.
still that nice Jewish girl was mentioned often enough where it stayed with me.
Of course.
And I felt, you know, well, I didn't even consider the idea of enjoying sex because I was so indoctrinated. I was really brainwashed.
Brainwashed.
I really was, in many ways, not just about sex.
Indeed. Indeed. And it really affected and eroded at your self-esteem.
It did. It did.
And given your family of origin experiences, in reading your book and talking with you in the pre-interview, I'm just so impressed with how you've managed to create your life in spite of these real difficulties in the beginning and messages. And they didn't stop when you were a kid. They went on and on and on until your mother's death when your mom, I guess, was 59, which is fairly young
mm-hmm.
to die.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a very critical person, and you just wanted to be touched and loved and appreciated by her, but it wasn't forthcoming.
No, and my father, while he had grown quite angry with me in the later years, because he felt that I didn't show my mother enough love,
mm-hmm.
Which unfortunately he never, you know, delved into why I might be feeling that way,
mm-hmm.
Nor did he permit it,
mm-hmm.
Any discussion of it. But after she died, he was even worse.
So how was he worse?
He made a gift to me of her jewelry, but at the same time told me I didn't deserve it.
Yeah, and you said in your book that was one of the most humiliating, embarrassing times because you were in a coffee shop and he was
exactly.
pretty loud about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Other people could hear.
Yeah.
When my husband tried to quiet him down, he you know, rebelled against it and spoke even louder. So there were no boundaries, you know, in the sense that he could speak out any time he wanted, but I was not permitted, you know, the same benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So there were real forces to deal with, and it's just, you know, it's decades of therapy, you know, decades.
Yes. And you talk in your book about a period of your life where you were in deep depression, and during that time you did seek out a lot of professional help. You were even hospitalized for a while.
And so
what did you learn from all of that? And also, I want to know what your mother said to you about all of that.
Well,
but let's start with what did you learn from this?
From the hospitalization, you mean?
Well, and even, sure, and living through a deep depression, you had anxiety too, and so what did you learn?
It took really a variety of doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And medications, to help me. The hospitalization, I learned absolutely nothing. I was not helped there. I got therapy once a week for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Psychiatrists will do that. You know, they'll say, I'm going to titrate your meds, but no time for talk therapy.
No, there was no time, and I don't know whether it was a county hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether it was because of limitations of funds. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is that wasn't the place to get better.
No, so that's too bad. You were really stuck there, and there must have been some emotional scars from that period in your life.
That was probably the worst period of my life.
Oh.
Yeah.
But you are a survivor.
I must say that my father did help me leave there, or I could have wound up, you know, there's a hospital down south here, further out than Malibu, called Camarillo, and it's like the last place on this earth you ever want to go.
No, you don't want to go there.
You don't want to go there.
No.
And I was basically headed there because I was in the hospital for 3 months, and they said, okay, if you don't leave shortly, that's the next step.
And here you are, a woman already with anxiety, and it's got to increase your anxiety so much more.
And this was, you know, one time in my adult life that my father did help me out in trying to have me come home and live with he and my mother. And I said right away that I couldn't because I was so vulnerable to then go home to my mother who, you know, was so cold and criticizing. I just didn't think I'd make it.
Yeah, good. You were your own best advocate and you knew what you could manage and what you couldn't, even.
Except I didn't want to go to Camarillo either.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it was like, okay, which is the worst decision here?
Mm-hmm.
So I did go home, and he tried to be very helpful, and she was same old mom.
Right.
And one day she was cooking, and I came in the kitchen to talk to her, and she asked me how I was feeling, and I said, not too good. And she said, you know, if you can't pull yourself out of it, if you can't smile and enjoy life, then you may as well kill yourself. That was not very encouraging.
No, that's, and I think that that's a pretty shocking thing for a mother to say to her daughter. I mean, it's just shocking.
So yes, it was.
You said in your book that maybe, as you, it was in your finale part where you said you weren't sure about how come your parents were so critical throughout your life, throughout the time that they were on this earth, that maybe you were a scapegoat for their problems, for your parents' problems. And I have a different theory, and it has to do with this, that their own families of origin, your mother's, your father's, mm-hmm. were pretty brutal, mm-hmm. where there wasn't much affection or good attachment.
No, that's true.
And you know, we learn a lot. You know, the first relationship is the basis for all others. And I think that the nature of one's emotional attachment in the family of origin establishes not only the ability to achieve a sense of connection, but the degree of security in later relationships. So attachment and attachment theory is fascinating, and I use it a lot in my counseling, but attachment to a consistently responsive caregiver, and usually that's the mother in infancy, is nature's first coping system. Well, your mother somehow wasn't able to give this to you, so your ability to cope was damaged.
Yes.
And yes. And I'm just amazed, Lynn, that you have coped and have managed as well as you have in your life, given the beginnings.
Thanks.
Yeah.
One of my doctors had said, because I've been writing and wanting to write for most of my life,
mm-hmm.
one of them said, I'm amazed because I was complaining that I wasn't putting forth the amount of work that I'd like to be putting forth, you know, reading about this one and that one and coming out with 10, 20 books and everything.
Right.
And he said, I'm surprised you can write at all.
Yes. Yes.
So it's gone slow, but the healthier I get, the more I can write, and the best thing is that I can express myself now.
You can express yourself, including sexually, so that let's make this a good segue into that.
Yes.
Because the title of your memoir is My Sexual Awakening at 70.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get the title right? I think I did.
You did. You got the title absolutely right.
And I encourage the listeners to go to your website, Lynn Brown Rosenberg, Lynn with no E, brownrosenberg.com, and you will read there that this wonderful lady started creating very early in life. She began with poetry at age 4. And when she turned 22, she took her first job as a pianist, vocalist, after just 2 weeks of piano lessons. And I guess you'd had some in your youth, but...
Correct.
But you brushed up. But that is amazing. It truly is amazing. And that you've written screenplays, and two of them have been recently optioned for feature films, and that's great, Lynn.
Thank you.
Yes, and as a good segue into your talking about your sexual awakening, Lene Cross, who responded to, I guess you were quoted on Salon.com and also Huffington Press.
Right.
She said, wow, a Shades of Gray for us older gals.
Yeah. Right.
Where there's life, there's hope. Keep writing. And that's wonderful.
Well, you know, I got into this whole turning my life around. One day I realized I hadn't had sex in 15 years.
Yeah, back up and talk about your husband's illness and his death.
Okay. Okay.
Because that, then you didn't have sex after his death. But what happened there? I read about it, and it really touched me.
Well, leading up to his illness, we had not been a real great sexual match.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my upbringing, and I don't know about his,
mm-hmm.
neither one of us talked about it during our 15-year marriage.
Mm-hmm. That's a big mistake, because I see couples like that, and that's, you know, you got to talk about it, but you didn't.
We didn't. We
yeah.
didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he got melanoma,
mm-hmm.
and was stage 4 right off the bat. And yet it was 6 years before he died. So he was one of the so-called lucky ones in that he lived quite a long time, but it wasn't an ideal life because he was compromised. And I always had my heart in my mouth as to, you know, who might come around us, who might have a cold or anything that might compromise his
mm-hmm.
immune system. So it was really 6 frightening years.
Yeah.
And sex was for sure not important then.
Right.
And
yes.
Losing him was very traumatic because
uh-huh.
even though we weren't sexually compatible, so we were soulmates.
Yes.
And I loved him. I loved him dearly.
Yes.
And you can never really be prepared. You just can't.
Yeah.
You find yourself in the silence, and you don't know what to do with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're so used to having another person there.
Of course.
And so for many years after he died, I didn't want to get close to anyone because I didn't want to go through that again. I didn't want to take the chance of maybe having to go through that again.
Yes, and you talk about that in your book, that it would be safer for you to be with a younger man because you
well,
had to
Well, not only
spend,
safer, but
yeah.
for some reason younger men appeal to me.
Sure,
so
and they're sexually better functioning and so on, yeah?
Right, right. And so, but anyway, after 15 years in this realization, and the realization that I had always kind of had trouble having orgasms,
mm-hmm.
I started asking my doctors, you know, inquiring, number one, I was on a medication that wasn't helpful, and I asked if there was another medication that I could be on, and I did
you were on Prozac, right?
I was on Prozac.
And that is a known side effect for Prozac.
Well, it sure was with me. That's,
yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And then he switched me to a couple of other medications, which helped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then my other doctor, when I told her about the orgasm problem, she...
Mm-hmm.
She suggested I go to a porn shop and buy toys and porn.
And what an enlightened doctor. But, of course, you're in Los Angeles. I don't know that this would have happened. No offense to the Midwest, but I'm not sure this would have happened. Nebraska somewhere.
Right.
But, you know, that's amazing, and I'm so delighted to hear that a doctor is that, she was a female urologist, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That she was that open that she could say, yeah, go to a sex shop, get some porn, get a vibrator.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped. It was a great idea. I mean, I had never been in a sex shop in my life, never ever thought about even going to one.
Uh-huh.
So my heart was racing when I went over there. And I thought, I just want to get in and out of here as fast as possible.
But then, and you mentioned this in your book, and I, well, either that or in the pre-interview, but the pleasure chest, which when I lived in Los Angeles, I went there. It's in West Hollywood, and it's
mm-hmm.
like a lot of really good sex stores. It's well organized with really friendly female sales girls.
Very nice, very respectful, yeah. friendly, but not too friendly.
Right.
You know?
They're well-trained, actually.
They must be well-trained.
They're well-trained, and they also know a lot about which sex toy might be good for you, depending upon what you need.
I couldn't believe I was, you know, standing there and asking these sex questions, you know, with a complete stranger about sex toys. I mean, it was just, you know, it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah.
But right away, I started having orgasms.
Yes.
And so
yes, that's great.
The med change and the porn and the sex toys. It was great. I was having two a day.
Two a day.
You know, my girlfriend called it afternoon delight.
<You know? laughs> No, that's so wonderful, because a lot of women will complain, and I have them in my practice, that post-menopause, their orgasms are muted, they're not as intense, or they go away altogether. And
mine was just the opposite.
Yeah.
And I had, I mean,
that's because you had good stimulation.
Huh?
That's because you had good stimulation.
I did.
Visual
I did.
And
good circulation.
Physical. And circulation, yeah.
Because that's important, too.
Absolutely.
And I had, you know, most importantly, out of all this, I had the desire to change.
That's a very important thing to say. Would you say more about that?
I was tired of living a sexless life. And
right.
If there was anything that I could do to cause a change for myself, then I was willing to do it. And I think, you know, I think an open mind, or a closed mind, rather, is the biggest barrier to any of these problems we're discussing.
It's really
because
true, yeah.
I could not, until really this point, free myself of my parents' judgments of me. But when I started to open up my mind to be sexually free, I was also able to be emotionally free.
That is a really important message, and I hope that the listeners will take that in. So you opened your mind, and you let go of a very difficult family of origin, parents who with ongoing negative sex images, messages, and yet you were able to override that and keep an open mind, and you began to watch porn.
I did, and then when I said to my doctor, well, I can't keep going back and buying porn all the time, and he was very open-minded. I was very lucky to have the doctor I had. And
you were.
He said,
there are lots of doctors that aren't so open-minded.
He said, I've heard it all.
Oh, I love
this
doctor. You have to tell me off the air who he is. That's great.
His name is Dr. Steve David. I'm sure he wouldn't mind my giving
Oh, good. All right.
He's fabulous.
Yeah,
and
wonderful.
He's
and he's in Los Angeles.
Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm.
Beverly Hills, yeah. Love it that he's so open-minded.
He told me that there's free porn on the net.
Yeah.
So I figured, all right, I'll see what that's about. And one asked me to sign up, and I thought, I'm not going to sign up to anything. Don't you get jailed for this? And I asked him about it, and he said, no, that's just child pornography. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
But I still never signed up. I found the free porn, and
all right.
I never had to sign anything.
Lynn, we're going to return to this conversation,
okay. But
we're half past the hour, and so PRN needs to run a few little promos.
Okay.
So we'll come back in just a few minutes, and we'll continue with this very exciting, illuminating discussion. So
Great. Stay
with us, everybody. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and my guest is Lynn Brown Rosenberg, the author of My Sexual Awakening at 70. And we've been chatting about the mix of, well, we're about to get into it a little bit more, but the mix of vulnerability and reciprocity, because that is at the heart of intimacy. And Lynn learned about it later in life. She started watching porn. She started chatting with men on sex chat websites. And I want to know, even though I've read your book, and I encourage other people to do it, what did you explore that enhanced your sexual pleasure on these sex chat websites?
Well, first of all, I should say that I was so completely against porn my whole life.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch it. I didn't want to hear about it. You know, I thought people loved each other. That should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to realize that it may not be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's nothing wrong with porn, and in fact can be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's where I started with a no porn attitude. And then from there, I kind of got used to it. And so I was looking to my doctor for what else I could do. And he suggested that there are sex chat websites.
Yes.
And I thought, there's no way I can do that. Absolutely no way. But one night, mm-hmm. I decided to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but before that, there was one porn video in particular that I watched that had me mesmerized.
Mm-hmm.
It was a woman who just talked and touched.
Mm.
That's all she did, was talk and touch.
In this porn video?
In this porn video.
Do you remember the actress?
Oh, I don't know the actress, no.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Okay. But she talked and touched.
Yes. But it was so powerful that I made notes.
Yeah,
and,
good for you.
And, you know, like my classroom. And I thought, if I'm going to do this sex chat thing,
mm-hmm.
that I need to be prepared, because I had no idea what to say.
Right, right.
So I went on, and for the very first one, the man was decades my junior, which, you know, kind of intimidated me right then and there, because I thought, what does he want with someone my age, and what am I doing with somebody his age? But anyway, pretty soon all that didn't matter,
mm-hmm.
because we were both adults,
you know.
And so I called upon my notes, and he was very exciting. He was very excited, and thanked me many times.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said in my book, should I be thanked for such a thing? I don't know.
I think you should, and I'm glad you were.
But anyway, it was really exciting and fun. That's mm-hmm. another element that was so missing from my life, both in my daily life and in my sex life.
Yeah.
Fun.
Just fun.
And, you know,
yeah, I often say to my clients, when was the last time you had some fun together? You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes they look at each other like, oh, fun? Play? And, of course, sex, ideally, is lots of fun and lots of play.
Should be. So, I decided to come back again,
mm-hmm.
and again,
mm-hmm.
and for several months I really enjoyed talking to a variety of men. When I say talking to, I mean on the internet,
right?
And never ever dreaming that I would meet anybody off the site, never. But then after a period of time, there were a couple of men who wanted to meet me, and I did meet them, and they were actually very nice. You know, I had imagined that they might be, you know, whatever. I don't know what I imagined, but
right.
different than the normal
online dating men, and they weren't. They were, in fact, if anything, they were nicer.
Interesting. But, Lynn, that took a lot of courage on your part.
Well, it did.
Yeah.
It did. I was so nervous. It did.
To do that. To go from very, you know, great sex talk online, I am, right, instant messaging.
Yes. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Right.
And, and then to go from that to actually having enough courage. Now, depending upon where a woman lives, that might not always be the safest thing.
Well, of course,
did you have a filter?
I didn't meet anyone at my home.
Right,
I always
course.
Went to a restaurant, always, there weren't that many
Public.
Times, but the few times I met at a restaurant, in fact, the same restaurant.
Yeah. El Torito?
Yes, because it's close.
I read that
to
in your
home.
Book, yeah.
And sometimes there would be kissing that would go on, and, you know, I'd come back to the restaurant and meet somebody new, and I think, I wonder if the waiter remembers me.
Or the bartender.
Or the bartender,
well,
right.
Well, who cares anyway, right? It's Los Angeles. And anyway, but you persevered.
I did. I persevered. And ultimately, nothing came out of these meetings. These, mm-hmm. You know, they didn't develop into a relationship. But you know, all these things were transitional phases, I think, to get
yes.
me to where I needed to go.
Yes, and it was so good that you could recognize that.
And then write about it.
And then write about it. And so that's some of what you learned from writing your memoir and going and learning more about your journey towards sexual awakening.
Well, there was another thing that I did, which I had absolutely no comprehension that I would ever be doing this, but a girlfriend of mine, a new girlfriend at the time. I met her right when I was starting to do this. She's a writer also.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me a book of erotic stories. And I took it, you know, and mm-hmm. I had never read an erotic story before, so I didn't know what to expect. And I found them pretty arousing.
Yes.
And then she writes erotic stories, and she suggested that I write one and enter a contest, a gay
yes.
one. And I thought, oh, wow, how can I? I don't think I can do this to begin with, but let alone, you know, how could I relate to gay men? I, you know, it's completely out of my whatever knowledge, experience.
Yeah, right.
And I said, no, I really couldn't. And then I thought about it, as so often happens with me. I say no, and then I think about it, and I wind up doing it. And
well,
so
need,
I did.
You need time to process it.
Evidently, I'm the kind of person that needs time to process.
Well,
you know,
think it's understandable because you...
these kind of decisions, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... You know, based on your family of origin
right.
and you're just probably what happened because of your difficulties in your growing up here is that your amygdala, which is the part of your brain that houses fear and anxiety, became a little more active and even hypervigilant. So it's harder for you to take some risks. And yet you've done a lot, and that's why I'm just so impressed with you.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice to hear. That's
so you wrote sweet. You wrote gay male eroticism?
So I wrote gay male, and...
Yeah. Did you watch a few
you know.
gay videos?
No, not videos.
No, I don't mean that. Just in preparation for writing, did you watch
Oh,
them?
No. No.
No, you just used your imagination.
just took a stab at it, and I thought it turned out pretty good. I mean, I put it in my book, so others can make a decision with it if they think it's any good or not.
Yes.
And then I started writing. She had me enter other contests, and I did, and I wasn't getting anywhere, and I thought, why am I spending all this time writing erotic stories when I could write a whole book? So,
right.
But I did write some more erotic stories, and I did enjoy it. They were actually, you know, another avenue toward of sexual expression.
Yes, another avenue for sexual expression.
I recommend it. I really do.
Yes, and my guest next week is Joan Price, and she's been on before, and I think you said you listened to maybe a previous show.
I did, and I met her.
And you met her?
I met her at the Pleasure Chest, actually.
That is great.
She gave a workshop there. It was about a month and a half ago, actually.
That is wonderful. Well, you know, as you know, then she, one of her, well, her most recent book, it's Ageless Erotica, and as I read the erotica parts of your book, I thought, oh my goodness, too bad that you weren't contributing to her book, Ageless Erotica, because you write so well. I mean, that's what's fun about your memoir. It goes from, you know, all of your experiences growing up and as a young adult and your challenges and this and that, and then you have interspersed erotica that's really very sexy.
Thank you.
Threesomes.
Yeah, well, it was,
foursomes
it was fun
even.
You know what got me started?
Yeah.
Was one of the guys that I was communicating with. We started to get creative with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I would write a scene, and he would follow up on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was increasing our sexual excitement with each other. And then from there, I started writing stories on my own.
You know, I
mean,
that's a lovely idea for many people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea.
It really is.
Because if you're in a sexy relationship, it might be fun. For one of you to write a scene like you did.
Exactly.
And the other to write the ongoing scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely fun and exciting and rather memorable.
Yes. Is that Hank? I've forgotten.
Is that what?
Hank?
It was Rod.
Okay, right. Yeah.
No, Hank was, that was another thing, phone sex.
Yes, phone sex.
Which I had never done before either. And,
right.
And that has lasted over a year.
That's wonderful. So bring us up to date. What's happening for you now?
What's happening now is
now.
That, you mean in my sex life? Or in my life in general?
In your life in general, your life, your sex life, what do you really want? And
what
then,
I really want is another soulmate, only with great sex.
Boy, because you had a good soulmate with late husband, Jerry.
I did.
Yep.
And it's not easy to find, as we discussed.
Yes. Not
so
easy.
That's what I would love, but don't yet have.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, in addition to having written this memoir, I write thrillers and mysteries and love stories. So I'm about to start a new mystery, suspense.
I think that's wonderful. And I read on your website that you've written many screenplays, two of which have been recently optioned for feature films.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's great, Lynn.
Thank you.
I hope it happens for you. You're so deserving.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
I hope it happens, too.
Yeah, because you've been, and then we haven't really talked about it too much, but you also entertained people with your piano playing. And
yes, I did.
Your singing, and you, and that took a lot of courage too.
That really took a lot of courage.
Yeah.
That took a lot of courage, and I only had 2 weeks. I decided literally overnight that I wanted to be a singer. I hated being a secretary.
Yeah.
And I went on this bus trip of the Western States and wound up at this coffee shop, and I heard a piano player who was just awful, and I asked the manager, and then I didn't think any more about it. I was thinking of trying to get a job as a waitress in the winter in Sun Valley, Idaho, is where it was, which I thought would be great fun working in a resort. And she says, what do you do? And all of a sudden I said, I play the piano.
And
she said,
you were
then
in your 20s.
Huh?
You were then in your 20s.
You were, right.
I mean, this is a while ago. But,
right.
But
right.
Again, it took a lot of courage given how you grew up.
Right. To just say I play the piano when I hadn't taken any lessons in 10 years. You know, as a kid, I had lessons, but
yeah.
Was never really very good.
Yeah.
And anyway, I went back to my old piano teacher, took 2 weeks of lessons, and I insisted that she send me my train fare. And I waited to see if she would send it or not before I went back to my old piano teacher. And she did. And that started an 8.5-year career.
You mentioned to me in our pre-interview, you were even up in Seattle at the Edgewater Hotel.
I was. I was for 2 rainy weeks. I was.
Yeah. Rainy is not surprising here in Seattle. That's a wonderful,
yes, it's
the
lovely
Edgewater
to stay there and perform there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great place, and of course, its major claim to fame is that the Beatles came to the Edgewater in 1964.
Right,
and they put their fishing poles, as they could do then, out the window to try to catch fish. An upper story. Yes, so. I'm just, you've learned so much through your years, and you're still learning. And by the way, as a gerontologist, I know this, and you exemplify it beautifully. And that is, if you continue to be curious as you age, curious about things, about life, about learning more, then you're going to probably have more longevity, right?
Well, that would be nice.
Yes. And so I thought it would be good to wind up this program today with a question. If you could talk to women out there, and we have a lot of them, what do you feel the message would be?
Well, I believe we can reinvent ourselves, and God knows I've done it many times.
Yes, you have.
And we can renew ourselves, and there's hope. There's hope for sexuality at a later age. There's hope for new and wonderful experiences, and The key is if you can possibly open your mind up, or even see if it's truly open or closed or partially closed. Because if you can open one door, it leads to another, and
yes.
It can lead to beautiful things.
And it has for you.
And it has.
Uh-huh.
I like my first book signing.
Really?
That I arranged today.
Uh-huh, good.
So that's very exciting.
Wonderful, and this is the book that we've been talking about,
right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good for you, Lynn. That
Thanks.
Is wonderful.
Thanks.
And the other thing that we haven't really talked about that much, and we have a few more minutes, so we might as well, you say in your book that You can have powerful orgasms by yourself, and I'm often suggesting to women that if they don't have a partner, they masturbate. Mm-hmm. Maybe even with two vibes, one, a dildo inside the vagina because it's a use it or lose it kind of thing. The vaginal walls need to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, so maybe two vibes, one inside the dildo and the other on the clitoris.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very powerful. And, of course, orgasms are so good for our health.
Well, they are. They are. And I've just, you know, I wrote a little blog on my website, Why Bother with Orgasms?
I did see that.
Especially, you know, at age 69, 70, whatever.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now.
To me, they make you feel more present, more alive, more connected with the universe, more feminine, healthier, just all good things. I had the most powerful orgasm I've ever had by myself.
Yes. Well, you know, and it's wonderful that you can stay with it, and you could be such an inspiration for other women. You know, I've heard things from my clients like, oh, it's kind of weird that I have to depend on something mechanical. And then I'll say, well, okay, but a vibrator can move much faster than any tongue or finger.
Mm-hmm.
Or for that matter, penis can move.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't always use a vibrator. In fact, most of the time I don't. But
okay,
but I have,
it's great to use both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try your recipe of the two.
Well,
of the two, I haven't done that.
Well, sure. And the dildo inside the vagina is good for women who are not having regular intercourse because they can do the Kegels bearing down on the vibrator, and that will help strengthen their vaginal walls.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good to know.
Yes, a lot of women are glad to know that.
I do those Kegel exercises all the time, by the way.
Oh, good for you, Lynn.
Yes,
But the whole idea is to stay juicy between partners, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So you've moved a long way. I'm looking at your website, My Sexual Awakening at 70. I was sexually conservative back when I was single. I let myself go a few times, but my head was mostly filled with phrases like, a nice Jewish girl doesn't enjoy sex.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very powerful message for you, but you overcame it, and good for you.
You know, some messages just shouldn't be listened to.
Yes. Yes. That's very, very true. So, I'm so glad that you've been my guest today, this afternoon in some parts of this evening, parts of the world. We have apparently a lot of listeners in China, so I don't know even what time it is there. But, but you do give a lot of hope.
Great.
For women of all ages. And thank you so much, Lynn. And I'll do a write-up, everybody. And so you'll learn more about Lynn from the write-up and then from listening to the show if you haven't listened live. Thank you again, Lynn.
Thanks so much, Diana.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.